Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. There is a community of human beings who constitute a nation of no flag, no border, no common language, people that live in the northern and southern hemispheres, the eastern and western hemispheres. They number 23 in the top 25 most populous nations on Earth, and they have no name. They can't vote. They have no leader, no government. They are the 60 million refugees or displaced persons pushed from their homes by war, conflict, or oppression. This number announced this spring by the United Nations represents a scale of homeless, stateless people unknown in human history. This hour, two voices of this crisis, a life and death struggle to escape a life and death struggle in a homeland crumbling. Just this year, 1,700 people from Africa and the Middle East have died trying to cross the Mediterranean. What is the responsibility of the rest of the world? The United States has taken in more refugees than any other country, but is that even close to what is needed? Simon Henshaw is a principal deputy assistant secretary at the State Department's Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. He has a lot of power, but he also has one of the best views of a 21st century crisis spiraling out of control.
First of all, there is actually a difference between refugees and internally displaced persons in this manner. Refugees do have a special protection guaranteed by two conventions, one from the 50s and one from the 60s, which protect them, which require countries to protect them when they enter and provide certain services to them. And the international community has done a great job of that in the past 50 years in taking care of refugees and making sure that they're protected. There are really two problems that are leading from that. One is just the overall number is making it hard to deal with all these people. And secondly, internally displaced people don't have the same sort of protection because of sovereignty concerns within each country where this is going on. These people don't have a voice, you're right. All they have are the clothes and their backs when they run away, and they survive due to benefits given to them by international organizations and others. So it's very hard for them to have a voice in today's world.
Is this a product of the proliferating population in a planet where there's 7 billion people? Are there going to be 60 million refugees and displaced people? And, you know, is that a decent figure given the population of the world these days? Or is there something else driving this that really puts it out of scale?
I can only give you a personal answer there. And my feeling is, no, that's not the case. The real problem is the expansion of political violence around the world in many different places.
Is there a regional manifestation of this that concerns the State Department, or is it basically the same face of this displacement wherever you go?
What really concerns us is that this is spread worldwide through a number of regions. It's not just in one single region. There are issues in Southeast Asia. There are issues in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Obviously, there are long-term issues in Africa, which have gotten worse in the last few years, the Middle East. But they're even in our own hemisphere, in Colombia, with the internally displaced persons. That's the largest number of internally displaced persons in the world inside Colombia. So one of the scary things is about how widespread this is.
Are our arms spread wide for these refugees and displaced persons in the United States, or is it much more complicated than that?
You know, I think Americans should be really proud of what their government does here. First of all, we're the leaders in diplomacy and looking for peaceful solutions to many of these conflicts, and that's what's really required, ending these wars and finding peace. On the humanitarian front, we are the largest contributor, $6 billion a year, B for billion. And we give far more than any other country in supporting refugees and internally displaced persons. And our aid is based not on political causes, but on need of refugees and internally displaced persons.
And is there a particular place that you wish we could have better representation in resettling right now in the world, a trouble spot that concerns you more than others?
I think the biggest trouble spot right now is the Middle East, and we're very focused on increasing numbers of Syrian refugees and other refugees from the region. But I don't want to discount refugees from many other areas. We have a large African program right now, and we're increasing the number of Congolese that are coming to the country, for instance.
Would you say the process for a refugee to come to the United States is complicated, is simple, that if it is complicated, that people can get ready assistance?
It's complicated. There's no way around that. We have certain security concerns and health concerns as well. So we have a long, drawn out process which makes sure that people coming to the United States are not a threat to our national security.
Finally, Simon, what do you say to the argument that with 60 million displaced or refugees, that this problem is out of control of the existing infrastructure, that it's basically left the barn and the barnyard, and it really would take some fundamentally different kind of infrastructure to deal with the numbers that are coming in the next few decades?
I think it's absolutely true that the numbers have reached beyond the abilities of humanitarians to deal with. I don't want to predict that the situation will get worse in the coming decades. I hope that world leaders find the way to end these conflicts and that people can start going home.
Simon Henshaw, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Simon Henshaw is Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary at the State Department's Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. Could one voice speak for all of the refugees in the world? Each story different, each person with his own family, his or her own language. Kifleh Hussein is one voice of the millions of refugees pushed from East Africa alone. Born and raised in Ethiopia, Kifleh Hussein is a human rights attorney who was thrown in prison on charges of corruption. He sought asylum in Uganda, lived there for 7 years, waiting to be granted asylum in the United States, where he lives today in Dallas, a refugee. He's now a research associate at the engineering school at Southern Methodist University. He knows he's lucky. He says he never stops thinking of home and the millions like him from all over the world who just wait.
Before I made it to Texas, as you know, many people like me from the third world, we have high expectation of United States in terms of economy, in terms of freedom, and some of the expectation is unrealistic. There are some folks from my continent who think that coming to the United States is like getting to heaven. We consider United States as a symbol of freedom, justice, equality. And sometimes you find some contradiction. You come here, okay, you get protection, that is good, but you never forget your people, your country. The situation in Ethiopia in terms of freedom is really deteriorating, even in terms of economy. And yet, on the other hand, the government of the United States is kind of cozy with the current regime. So that is a contradiction to me. While I'm so happy being resettled in the United States, getting all kinds of opportunity, the future is bright for me, for my kids, but at the same time, I ask myself sometimes, what is the point?
Well, Kifleh, let's talk about what could improve the situation. Do you think the United States has more clout in trying to make governments around the world that have problems with the refugees more free, more tolerant, so that people wouldn't leave? Do you think the United States needs to get more involved in direct economic aid to improve the economies of those countries?
Yeah.
Or do you think there needs to be a better process for people declaring that they want to leave and go to another country like the United States so they don't have to do what you had to do, fleeing to Uganda for 7 years and making your way overland to Dallas, practically?
What the United States can do is have strong stance on regimes like Eritrea, Zimbabwe. But when it comes to to regimes like my country, it's kind of soft. So that seems to be a double standard. President Obama, when he was in Ghana, he made a remark that United States gives support to individuals and institutions that are responsible. Regimes like the Ethiopian one are not responsible. There is evidence, ample evidence. So that is what has to stop. It has to be questioned, where do all the money go? Why does Ethiopia have all these desperate migrants? Is really the economy improving? There are so many prisoners in Ethiopia. Independent organizations like Red Cross, Amnesty International cannot access this prison facilities, people who are in terrible, highly congested prisons, the human rights violations. There are so many problems.
Kifleh, if you were to speak to all of the refugees that are out there, all of the 20 million refugees worldwide, and try to say something that might unite them to give them more political clout, all of you more political clout in the international community, what would it be? What would you say?
I would say, let's get together on the ticket of humanity. not on fickle politics. For any country to meaningfully develop, a human being should be respected. His potential should be recognized. When a human being is respected and when his potential is recognized, forced displacement should stop. They have to be free to live in their own country, to work in their own country, and to prosper in their own country without fear of persecution.
How do you think that could be accomplished?
One, I think by continuing to speak up the truth and by not giving up. There were many times that I came to giving up. You know, it has been 8 years since I left my country, and the situation is not changing, it's deteriorating. So I'm asking myself sometimes, am I a fool? So by not giving up, by continuously speaking up the truth.
What would you say to someone back home who you know is being persecuted right now?
This may sound so ironical, but I would say to them, before you flee from your country, think long and hard. If there is a life-threatening situation, and then if you have to flee, then flee. But otherwise, think long and hard. Sometimes there is this illusion that you would have better conditions, especially in the Western world. The reality is not. The way I fled, I'm lucky. I left my country through the airport, and then I landed in Uganda. And then after some time, even though the process was protracted, the way I resettled in the United States, the process is smooth. I came to the United States safely. But for some, it's not like that. So I say, think, you know, long and hard before you flee, before you decide to flee.
Well, Kiflu, we're glad that you're here, and we're certainly glad to hear you speak in a voice that at least evokes some of the issues that all 20 million refugees worldwide can relate to. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Kiflu Hussein is a refugee from Ethiopia. Today, he's resettled in Texas and working as a research associate at the engineering school at Southern Methodist University in Dallas.